from This Is Movies On Up. No one gets off until he does. And for a fourth calendar year, he is my co-host, Mr. Dave Becella.
That's me.
That's Dave. I'm Ryan. We are Movies On Up. Our very first tagline contest for the year of our Lord 2015, no one gets off until he does. If you know what movie that comes from, send your guess off to us in one of the following ways. moviesonup@gmail.com. You can send it via email, facebook.com/moviesonup. You can leave your guess there or tweet it directly at Mr. Dave on the Twitter @moviesonup if you are correct. And if we choose you, we will send you a prize package, the very first one of 2015, full of all sorts of filthy things.
Yep, Jay's West was the big winner, got a bunch of prize packages in 2014. It's 2015 year, who knows? Speaking of Twitter, though, tweet at us, because I want to use the Twitter this year.
We're paying for it, we might as well use it.
And I haven't been good at tweeting, so tweet at us and make me tweet.
That's how it works?
I don't know.
All right, well, yeah, tweet at Dave, make sure that he tweets, and we'll tweet each other, I guess. That is something new we will do for 2015. Something that is not new, has been around since, I guess, the origins of this podcast, you might say, is one of our favorite episodes to do is actually kind of our year in review. We end up seeing kind of a lot of movies. We don't see much of each other towards the end of the year. We just bank record all of our episodes so that we don't have to sit in this room together. We can spend more time watching movies. And in that time, not only we watch some new movies, but we also put together our list of our favorites from 2014. We did it a little bit different this year. I think we've had separate lists before. We've had a lot of crossovers, and it's been confusing. So in an effort to streamline things, we have cooperated. We actually planned. I know. Brace yourselves. And we have one list of 15 movies that are collectively the Movies On Up top 15 of 2014. We should have done 14, right? 14 for 14?
Yeah.
14 and one to go on.
15,
it'll be in true Dave Becella fashion. We'll just have a two-way tie for number, 14 or one. It doesn't matter.
This was all planned, like, right before recording. So we each did our top 10 list
planned,
for the year.
Nonetheless.
I actually had top 20. He had top 18. So we thought, let's just go with it.
There was some math involved. There was computation.
Writing stuff on paper.
Yeah, I got ink
on my
fingers now.
We worked more on this episode than we have the last 3 years. Anything.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, Ryan did more work making a list than I've ever done on the podcast.
I made a list and checked it twice. This was an episode that's pretty much a year in the making, so we might as well try and do it right, at least. And I think neither of us were quite sure what was going to end up where in the list. It was kind of a surprise to say, hey, guess what our number four favorite movie is this year? Yeah, okay. We'll see. And if you'd like to know what our number four favorite movie is, I suggest you settle in, because we'll get there. But first, we're going to start at number 15 with our 15th favorite movie from 2014. And it is a movie that I think was on Dave's most anticipated list. If it wasn't, I'm sure he talked about it, because there's a couple folks that are podcast favorites. And we haven't talked about this particular young lady very much in 2014. But we're going to remedy that in 2015 by starting off with Mike Cahill's I, Origins, starring Michael Pitt, Steven Yeun, and, of course, Britt Marling as our 15th favorite of the year.
I loved this movie in the same way I loved Another Earth. I really like what Mike Cahill does. It's not a Britt Marling movie. This is a Michael Pitt movie all the way through. Britt Marling's crucial in it, but it's a Michael Pitt movie from beginning to end. It's a slow burn. It's a little bit more of a slow burn than I think Another Earth. But much like Another Earth, I always talk about moments. And, you know, Another Earth, the talking to Earth 2, like live on TV, like that moment makes the whole movie for me. The ending makes the movie for me. Like, the moments they had to get right, they got right. I could say the exact same things about I, Origins. It's a slow burn, never picks up to breakneck speed. It's never super fast. But the moments they have to hit, they get it right. It's a Michael Pitt movie all the way through. Britt Marling's great in it for what she does, but it's Michael Pitt all the way, and he carries it. He does a great job. You see him go through quite a bit, and you see a lot of depth with his character and everything he's going through, and Britt Marling's just kind of perfect for what she's there to do. From beginning to 10% until the end, maybe it didn't make the impression on me that, if I had to shut it off 10 minutes early, maybe it doesn't make my top 10 of the year. But then that ending.
Or 15 in this case.
Yeah, it was in my top 10. But that ending, you look back and think that it all built up to that, and it makes sense. It makes it worth it. The destination makes the ride worth it. It was done so well. Like, just Mike Cahill nails the moments he has to. And this one, Another Earth, I mean, I could say the same stuff about both of them, and I pretty much just did. That I'm jumping on for the ride. I know it may not go exactly how I want it to, but I know it'll be worth it in the end. And Iowa Origins is no exception.
We can say a pretty competent follow-up for a guy that's got a documentary on his resume and then Another Earth, Iowa Origins, and I think he's got a TV movie that he's doing too. And he's kind of I don't want to call him a throwback auteur, because he's, you know, doing the screenplay and he's directing them, but definitely like two out there premises, yeah, I guess, to start off.
And I don't want to get out. He's not a one trick pony by any means. I can say what I like about Iowa Origins is the same stuff I liked about Another Earth. But these movies
are very different movies.
They're very different movies. They both have a sci-fi tinge to them. This one, not as much as Another Earth. It's still got that enough sci-fi to keep me into it. And they're completely different movies with definitely unique premises. And I'm on board for anything Mike Cahill does, Britt Marling or not.
Our number 14 stars a young lady that I think we are both on board with no matter what she does from here on out. Based off a book, and if you'd have told me that a book movie, a young adult book movie, would be on my list for favorite films of the year, I probably would have told you were nuts, until I sat through the Kid Cancer movie, perhaps better known as The Fault in Our Stars, directed by Josh Boone, starring Shailene Woodley, Ansel Elgort. This was one I had zero expectations for. It may surprise you to learn that I didn't, in fact, read the book before seeing the movie, but I know what she can do. And knowing just what the plot was about, I thought, this is going to be worth seeing. I may not like it, but I think that there are some movies that you see just for the performance. The entire movie may not be great, but there can be a great performance in it. I don't necessarily know that I want to say The Fault in Our Stars is a great movie. I think it's really, really good. I think she's tremendous. Elgort is really good, too. And the chemistry they have together is phenomenal. It's great to see them on the screen together, and it's such heavy subject matter that a lot of times when you have a movie with such heavy subject matter, you don't necessarily need to see it again. This is one that I could see again. I could watch them again because they are so good on the screen together, and it's not quite the same watching Divergent. But I really liked the movie. I thought maybe it's because I had no expectations. It's not that they were low. It's just that I really had nothing, no expectations for the movie at all. Maybe that's why I liked it as much as I did. But I thought it was actually one of the better movie-going experiences that I had this year.
Did you like crying around people?
No. I liked a lot of people crying around me, and that's basically what it came down to. Not that I'm some kind of, you know, unfeeling robot, which I sort of am. But you always say, I think you just said it like 5 minutes ago, there are sometimes moments in movies that you have to nail. And maybe it's from a writing standpoint. I don't necessarily think it was as much a directing standpoint, but definitely from an acting standpoint. There's one particular scene, the eulogy scene, that absolutely is nailed in this movie. And it's so impactful. Really, the last 20 minutes, if you feel like you need to bawl your face off, and you haven't seen this yet, and God help you, if you haven't even read the book yet, I think it's absolutely worth a watch. She's tremendous. They're both great. And I'm looking forward to see what they do going forward, knowing that, you know, she can carry like a Jennifer Lawrence, like young adult action-y role. She can do this stuff too.
I was going to make that comparison exact. If you look at Shailene and J-Law's career trajectory, it wasn't Jennifer Lawrence the daughter on like the Jeff Foxworthy show or something?
Oh, goodness.
But like, and then Shailene Woodley wasted away on that American Teenager or whatever. She had a good year last year. She was in that Spectacular Now. Mm-hmm. The year before that was The Descendants, which I thought she was phenomenal in. She was great in Spectacular Now last year. Then this year, she kind of had her Hunger Games. She had Divergent, and then...
Which, obviously, not quite as successful as Hunger Games.
But same, she led it.
Right, same kind of movie. She was good in it.
It made money. She was competent. Her, Jai Courtney, Miles Teller, like Ansel Elgort.
That
like,
dude.
Yeah, it was... I mean, it was a watchable... For those movies, like, it was a watchable movie. And then she had this, which kind of shows off her chops and shows that, oh, she's not just, you know, Kay Stewart in Twilight, to where Kay Stewart's a great actress, never really showed it off in the Twilight movies. So,
and what she's most known for.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying Shailene's going to end up. And I mean, even the she was supposed to be Mary Jane in Spider-Man. So you have the Mystique and X-Men. So, I mean, like, her career trajectory is a lot of the same, but I don't think it's not going as fast as J-Law's did, because once she started to hit the scene, she just hit the ground running and hasn't stopped yet. But I really like Shailene Woodley a lot. I haven't seen this, but this and If I Stay were the two that were based on young adult movies that it's like, I'm interested in those just for the performances. I know it's heavy material for Shailene Woodley. If I Stay was heavy material for Chloe Moretz, two of the best young actresses right now. One of them did very well. The other one seemed to go unnoticed and be forgotten already. And that's why we're talking about one of them right now. But I'm excited to see what she has after the Insurgent movies are done.
Kind of taking a look here real quick. She's got the Insurgent and then Allegiant 1 and 2, all the Divergent series. She's right now in pre-production for an Oliver Stone flick. That's really about it for her, but... Definitely one that I think you could absolutely see getting the award nominations down the road like Jennifer Lawrence has. Speaking of award nominations, our number 13 is a movie that my co-host has said once or twice that will probably win an unprecedented amount of Oscars.
I've said nominated.
I think Dave actually would pick this movie to win the Super Bowl if he could, and it is Bennett Miller's Foxcatcher, starring soon-to-be Academy Award winner Steve Carell, soon-to-be Academy Award winner Channing Tatum, and if they can figure out a way to do it, soon-to-be Academy Award winner Mark Ruffalo.
I said nominated, and Golden Globes proved me right. They got Best Actor for Carell, they got Best Supporting for Ruffalo, and Best Director and Best Film. The general consensus on this movie, from people that have seen it, from reviews that I've read, have just been that it's lacking something, or that it's not as powerful as it maybe should be, or that it's just missing something. I don't know what, because from a directing standpoint, like, this is a beautifully directed movie. It's Bennett Miller at his finest. It's the tone of this movie. I mentioned Catfish, the documentary, like that, what they did with that, where it felt like a horror movie was going to break out at any time. This was a movie about Olympic wrestling that felt like a horror movie was going to break out at any time. Just the tone and the acting. Steve Carell, phenomenal. Like, he doesn't feel like you're watching Steve Carell at any point.
Doesn't feel like he's not playing Michael Scott.
No. And he's not unrecognized. He looks like John DeBunt. Like, he looks like him. Like, the chin thing, like, everything about him. He was in that role. Channing Tatum is fantastic. Mark Ruffalo, you don't expect anything less than fantastic. And he was at his Ruffalo-iest.
Incredible.
He was very incredible. I mean, maybe the movie lacks somewhere. I think it makes up for it in directing and acting. Like, it was a beautifully made movie. And, yeah, it wasn't my favorite movie of the year. I had it number 7 in my top 10, but... I wouldn't go out on a limb saying it's probably, quite possibly, the best movie I saw this year, the best made movie I saw this year.
So if it's lacking, it's not from the director. I mean, obviously, Bennett Miller, the guy that did Moneyball and Capote, you know he can make a movie.
Yeah.
And the acting...
And this is on level, like, nothing against Moneyball. Moneyball was fine, but if you played Moneyball and then you played Foxcatcher and you said, who's the better director... Moneyball it shouldn't even be in consideration, because Foxcatcher is such a more masterful, like, directing job than Moneyball was. It's a better acted movie. It's a better put together movie. Everything about it, I think, blows Moneyball away.
Then if there's something missing, I mean, is it missing in the source material?
I don't
story,
know. I don't know what
story.
It's missing, because it's one of those I don't see the complaint, but I understand it, I guess. I don't know. One of my buddies texted me that he said he saw it and it wasn't anything special, and I just don't I don't get it, because I think just the performances alone and just the directing job were worth watching. And, I mean, I like the story. The story's haunting, and Steve Carell is just creepy. It's just a very, very well-made movie. And we'll be talking about it again in our Oscar episode next month.
Yeah, so stay Spoiler tuned alert. For that one. Movie that comes in right above it at number 12, probably a movie that we won't be talking about in our Oscar preview episode, but we may talk about some people that appear in this movie next week when we do our favorite Marvel character kind of movies. That'll take some explaining. But this is our first Marvel movie of the year, and stay tuned. There's another one coming later. It is Captain America 2, The Winter Soldier, starring Chris Evans, Scarlett Johansson, and Samuel L. Jackson. Did you like this better than the first Captain America? Because
I think so. Yeah. But I love the first Captain America. This one, I just feel it was different because it felt bigger than a comic book movie.
Like, yeah, and I think it felt, to me, less like a Captain America movie and more like a Captain America slash Black Widow movie.
And then you had Falcon, who there's zero reason Falcon should work on screen. They made Falcon awesome. I mean, Anthony Mackie, I'm glad he's showing up in Avengers because he was awesome. Much like Don Cheadle is great in the Iron Man movies, they made Falcon, he's not just a sidekick. He's a great character. And
he brought a lot to the role.
He brought
a lot
of
personality
extra,
to it.
Yeah, and the chemistry between Evans and ScarJo, I love because, you know, you watch an action movie like Long Kiss Goodnight or something, you know Sammy Jackson, Geena Davis are going to hook up. Like,
just watching that this weekend.
So any of those, like, you get this tension, and it's like, oh, they're going to hook up just when. You don't get that feeling. You actually have, like, a buddy action movie between two gorgeous people, and at no point did I feel like, oh, they're going to hook up. And it followed the Marvel formula where it was great. It had the funny moments. It had just enough to keep it above being a dumb action movie. And it was a really good political thriller, I thought. Like, it was just well done in every aspect, and I loved it.
It was like the better Jack Ryan movie this year.
Yeah.
Sort of. If Jack Ryan had a shield instead of a gun, it was kicking ass. Our number 11, I guess, features another adorable couple, directed by David Wayne, starring a couple adorable people, Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler. They came together. I would say, just kind of looking at our list, it's probably our highest rated romantic comedy of the year. If you even want to call it a romantic comedy, written by Showalter and Wayne, directed by David Wayne. I guess that kind of would lead you to believe it's not quite the standard romantic. It's a bit snarky in nature, but a movie that I think both Dave and I really, really liked, and we were kind of excited to see it when it came out, and maybe we were the only two, but I thought it came out really good.
I haven't rewatched it since I saw it on video on demand in like June or so. I still quote it. Like, tell me about it. Oh, you can say that again. Like, I still quote lines from it, and it's such a good comedy, and it's up there. I mean, it's from the minds that brought you Wet Hot American Summer, which 15 years later, I still quote.
And
so,
that was another one. It took a while for people to come around and kind of get what's going on. I feel like people now probably get that sense of humor. They just haven't got to this yet.
Yeah, I loved it. But I've said many, many times, I'm a State fanboy. Pretty much anything any of them are involved in, I'm all about. But it's because they keep delivering. And I don't like this movie just because it's a David Wayne movie. I like this movie a lot because it's a David Wayne movie. Because it's everything I love about David Wayne perfectly. About Showalter, about Paul Rudd, like Amy Poehler. Like, it's just a charming, charming cast doing ridiculously funny stuff, and it's what a parody movie should be.
It is a great David Wayne version of a romantic comedy. It's not just him. Everyone in the movie is kind of in on it, and they're sort of doing Paul Rudd's take on a cheesy romantic comedy leading man, and everyone in the movie has definitely got their tongue placed firmly in their cheek.
I mean, this should actually be curriculum. If you are ever going to write a romantic comedy, you should have to watch this movie.
Because they will call you out on all your tropes that
you're
about to
put in
the movie.
Yes, because you will have to rewrite a lot of it. Because it plays
Tell
every trope. The basketball scene. Like, just everything about this movie is so great. Ken Marino's only on screen for like 3 minutes, but swish! Like, I just love everything about this movie, and I just adore it.
Probably the second best basketball scene that'll be on our list. That's a little teaser for a movie further up the list. One spot further up the list is one that I think technically, and this is where we could have some controversy, I think Dave considered this a movie from last year because he's got some fancy video on demand powers that I don't have. I saw it in January of this year, like the rest of America, and it is Peter Berg's Lone Survivor, starring Mark Wahlberg, Emil Hirsch, and our 2014 James McAvoy Award winner, Taylor Kitsch. Ben Foster puts a pretty good performance in there as well. We were both kind of interested in the story of it and how it was going to be executed by the guy that brought us Battleship with the star of Battleship. I think all the warning signs were there, but... And I think last year, you know, we talked enough about this movie. I think it got its own episode.
We did an episode about it.
Yeah. We did a Battleship episode, and we ended up talking probably more about this movie. So we're not going to rehash how much we really, really like it. But it's one of those deals that now seeing a lot of the spots for American Sniper, like that movie's going to have to be really, really good to keep up with what they did in this movie because it was phenomenal.
Yeah, and I mean, they feel like the same. Like, they're getting the limited release just to be
same time
for an
of year,
Oscar,
yeah.
And then wide release. And
although we both think that this kind of got screwed.
This did get screwed,
with
I think.
The Oscars, yeah.
I don't know that having Eastwood and Cooper on board will get it as screwed as much as Berg and Wahlberg, but...
Up to Berg and Taylor Kitsch or, you know, whoever, yeah.
But, I mean, it's a good movie. I really do enjoy this movie. A year later, I still... really, really like this movie. It's a good, I don't want to say action movie because it's more than that, but just the chemistry between the four, Kitsch, Hirsch, Wahlberg, and Foster, I love. And like I have said many times, Foster put on a phenomenal performance in this movie.
And that's actually our 10. So we are officially into our top 10 of this year. Our number 9 is an Adam Wingert movie starring Dan Stevens, Sheila Kelly, and Malika Monroe. It is The Guest.
I adored this movie. It's by far the best 80s horror movie to be made in 2014. You don't know what you get going in. And it's one of those, you're better off not knowing what you're getting into if you just let the story unfold and everything. Dan Stevens is everything you need to lead this kind of movie. He is phenomenal. I'm not going to say Oscar-worthy performance, but to make a movie like this, everything has to go right to pull it off, and that starts with Dan Stevens, and he nails it. He's so phenomenal to watch in this movie. Just to watch how he takes the character and what he does with it is great. That Malika Monroe, I think is her name, I think that girl is going to be a star. I really think she's carving a niche for herself right now. She had this year. It Follows, I think, is going to make a big impression on the horror scene next year. I just feel like she's going to be a big star, and this feels like it's at the beginning of it because she's really, really good in it. The score of this movie, I mean, they knew what they were going for, and they pulled it off. I could go on and on, but I don't want to say too much about it because if you haven't seen it or haven't heard about it, just go in blind because I did, and it was worth it. It's such a fun watch. And it's just so enjoyable. Again, Dan Stevens alone makes it worth watching. And then I really, really think that Malika Monroe is going to be a star.
Wingert's a director that, and we've had a couple of these, that like I want to like him. I want to like him more than I actually have to this point. He's done a couple segments in the first two VHS movies. He did a segment in The ABCs of Death, which, I mean, if you're going to weasel your way into my heart, doing some anthology horror is a good way to do it. I wasn't in love with Your Next. I mean, I thought it was okay.
See, I was. And I loved Your Next. I like The Guest even more.
I'm hoping to as well, but like the most fun I've had with an Adam Wingert movie was Autoerotic, which was not really a horror movie, but hopefully this one.
And The Guest really isn't either. It's hard to put it into a genre, but it's in the genre of you should watch this because it's a lot of fun.
Because it is our 9th favorite movie of the year. Our number 8 is a pretty late addition to the list because it came out at the very tail end of the year. We thought, I don't know, maybe it will, maybe it won't. It did, and it has our favorite or at least I'm calling it our favorite because it was the highest rated of the two, basketball scene of the year. It is Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen's The Interview, starring the aforementioned Rogen, James Franco, and Randall Park. We both kind of came to see this movie in very different ways. Dave jumped on it immediately once they announced it was going to be on video on demand. I kind of was going to do that, didn't get around to it, was driving to Cleveland and thought, what the hell? I'll watch it up there. Didn't get around to that either. And then saw it at the Discount Theater here in town for $3.
I was leaving work on Christmas Eve at 12:30 p.m., saw that it was going to be on demand on Google Play at 1 p.m. I was home by 10 after, had it fired up by a quarter after 1, and I loved it. I watched it twice in my 48 hours that I had the rental. I saw it out of genuine wanting to see this movie. I was excited for this movie. I love Rogen. I love Franco. I thought the premise was funny. I love Lizzie Kaplan. I had very high hopes for this movie. And, I mean, it ended up being in my top five. Like, it was a top five movie of the year for me because there's so many good laughs in this movie. Randall Park, I think, steals the show. Like, Seth Rogen, his character is the most compelling. James Franco's character is the more comedic, but Randall Park steals every scene he's in as Kim Jong-un. It's good because it is, I mean, it's an action comedy.
Yeah, I would say.
And I mean, most... To have an action movie villain that you actually feel humanized.
Which is weird as much as, and I understand why, you know, the North Koreans might get a little pissed off. But, like, they really did put a little bit behind the character.
It's not just, oh, we killed the bad guy. There's right. a part of you watching it that's like, oh, that's kind of, he's just misguided. Like, and they made him.
Misguided, misunderstood.
Yeah, and they gave that human element to him to where, this is how he was raised. Like, he doesn't know anything else. And just their writing. I love Goldberg and Rogen and how they write. Like, the whole Katy Perry ongoing gag, like, the joke, the callbacks, like, they're really good at great callbacks. And I love it. My only beef is that I wish they just, and this is silly, a silly complaint about a Rogen Franco movie, and it's not even really a complaint. I wish they'd have said a little bit more. You have this opportunity. Like, yes, it was more bashing American society than it was North Koreans by far. The whole existence of James Franco's character is a statement on, hey, we're idiots. We'll watch anything.
American news, quote
yes.
unquote.
So I wish they had an opportunity to say something a little bit bigger. And they didn't, which I'm fine with. It's not their... They're not obligated to, but
I actually kind of thought they did. I was a little surprised that there was as much in there about, you know, our kind of hunger for tabloid journalism and the fact that America coming in sticking their noses in things and maybe the situation in Korea isn't exactly what we think it is because we're really only getting one side of the story.
Yeah.
I see where you're coming from, but I thought that I was surprised that there was as much in it as there ended up being. I guess I saw this more out of curiosity. I like James Franco. I like Seth Rogen. I like them individually. When they get together, like I get what they're going to do.
Because you didn't like This Is the End.
I didn't like it all that much. I mean, I liked this better because I at least thought, and yeah, okay, maybe they're saying something about, hey, just don't be a dick and This Is the End. That's the takeaway from that movie. And this, I guess there was a little bit more than just one simplistic takeaway. But I thought, like, in terms of dick and fart jokes, I mean, they were both crafted about equally between the last two Franco-Rogen joints. But I thought some of the other jokes were a bit better crafted. And like you mentioned, the callbacks. And if you don't drive home from this movie singing Katy Perry, I don't know what your problem is. And the Frodo.
Yeah, like, the Lord of the Rings
yeah,
callbacks.
Yeah, there was so many of those that you could kind of, by the end of the movie, you could kind of see it coming. But.
And not to mention, I mean, we're not going to talk a ton about it, but this movie was quite possibly one of the most compelling news stories of my lifetime as far as movies go, I think. Like, this, me and my buddy Tony emailed about this.
Almost
the day,
ended the world.
The day everything happened, it's like, I don't think people realize, like, this is one of the biggest movie stories in 25 years or so, and the story was a lot more than it ended up being, but I was excited about the movie before all that happened, and it didn't let me down.
It was a lot of hot air blowing up that plastic bag. Our number 7, not that it's necessarily on the diametric opposite of the spectrum, but a movie that we both, it's a sequel, we both had some super high expectations for just based off the first one, which starred James Franco, and it would be Matt Reeves' Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, starring this time around one of the callbacks from the interview, Andy Serkis, Jason Clarke, Gary Oldman, Kerry Russell, and your boy, Toby Kebbell, who you think should probably get some sort of Oscar award.
That was my...
Or three.
In our Uppies episode, we gave a best non-screen performance, and I think we gave it to Serkis out of love. But
I think I did because I was picking it.
Yeah, but my God, Toby Kebbell in this movie. This movie was fantastic. I mean, the motion capture in this... Obviously, it was on a larger scale because in the first one, it was mostly just Caesar until the end. But
there were more ape characters this time.
There was a handful more. But yeah. I mean, and they all were characters. Like, they weren't just CGI monkeys or CGI whatever apes are, mammals. I don't know. Dolphins are mammals.
Monkeys,
I think apes are too.
Yeah.
But,
sure.
Like, there was a lot more to it.
This is biology on up.
And you felt like they had a community, they had a whole world of these completely CGI characters, but yet it felt real. The politics involved in it, I like that there was politics involved, there was like power struggles. Clarke, I really like Jason Clarke a lot. I thought he did what he needed to do. Gary Oldman was a little toned down, but still really good. But I mean, Serkis alone and something about Toby Kebbell, like what his character was doing, and I mean, a monkey or an ape riding a horse shooting two machine guns at the same time. That's almost Bazooka and Angels type level. I mean, that's probably the coolest shot I saw all year was ape double machine gun on the back of a horse. It should be higher on this list just because of that scene. If it were scenes on up, that was probably my favorite movie scene of the year.
Well, I guess that explains why it's quite as high as it is. I will admit, and maybe this is just being a victim of how much I loved the first movie and how much I loved the interplay between Franco and Caesar. I feel like Koba, the son, definitely kind of, I don't want to say filled that James Franco role, but that's really where the big interaction was. And they both did fine. I don't know if it was just for me, they were both CG characters that really made it tough for me, but I didn't like this as much as I liked the first one, which I guess is not saying a tremendous amount because of how much I really did like the first one. But we both thought it was pretty good, and I would say that there's a handful of sci-fi movies that made our list this year. It was kind of a good year for the science fiction. We'll just keep that going right on with our number six, which was Doug Liman's Edge of Tomorrow, starring Tom Cruise, Emily Blunt, and Bill Paxton, or if you've been listening to us for a while, you probably know this movie better as The Bitch of War.
It's hard to market the movie. They changed the name and then they regretted it. On the DVD cover, you can barely find Edge of Tomorrow. It's just Live, Die, Repeat. The billboards for the DVD release, Live, Die, Repeat. Really good movie, just released at the wrong time. This is a $100 million movie easy if you put it out in March.
Yeah, I mean, it got kind of put into that summer scrum, and I will admit to not seeing it in the summer. It took me till it came out on DVD to actually get around to watching it, but would I have loved to have seen it in that March-April range like Oblivion? Came out, I believe it was last year.
Yeah, it was March-April. Like, if you put it in that same time slot, it's a $100 million movie, and a lot more people see it.
And I think this is a better movie than Oblivion.
Oh, far
and
away.
Not to necessarily compare the two, because they're both Tom Cruise-led sci-fi flicks, but I thought this was really, really good. Time travel movies are tough, and yeah, I guess this is a time travel movie in the way that Groundhog Day is probably a time travel movie. Yeah.
And I mean, this was number 10 on my list. This actually ended up higher on our collective list.
Our composite list.
Yeah. It would have been higher if it ended like 90 seconds earlier. Like, if it ended like 2 minutes earlier, you're probably talking top three or four movie for me. I love this movie except for the last 2 minutes.
That's some of the complaint that I have with Oblivion too. It's like you could really, I don't necessarily root for bummer endings, but I mean, if you're going to have like a false ending, be kind of a bummer, and then just to kind of come back and tie things up and make everybody happy.
Oblivion's made sense at least. This one, there's no logic behind it. The false ending, that's still a happy ending because mission accomplished. Spoiler alert. But the actual ending just defies all the logic that I've bought into this world for the last 90 to 100 minutes, and now everything I know about the rules and the logic just doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think if you really allow yourself to get bogged down into the, okay, no, wait, what gives him the power to do that, and why doesn't he want to do that again? Yeah, that's kind of a big question mark I have about it. But if you just absolutely take everything at face value for this movie, I think the action scenes are great.
There's some sweet, especially some nice Emily Blunt action scenes. Like, yeah. She's awesome in this movie.
She's cool, and I love some of my favorite parts of the movie are like the restarts that Cruise has and
the
how
death
he
scenes, yeah.
Yeah, his death scenes, like when he's like, ah, shit, or he restarts with Bill Paxton and that whole thing again. I really liked that. I thought it was really cool to kind of see a little bit of personality from Tom Cruise, because I think we kind of just sort of pigeonhole him as this sort of, yeah, he can do action movies because he's been doing them for 30 years, but he was kind of funny.
He was perfect for the character, because the character is a soldier, but he's not a fighting soldier. He's a PR soldier.
Right.
Like, he's, you know, he's in the military, but he's the face that goes on TV and gets the public behind whatever decisions they make. And he's perfect for that. So then you throw him into a military situation. I like how they dealt with that, because somebody like Tom Cruise, generally in a movie, he gets thrown in, he's an action star instantly. But I like that there was the training and everything. And it just a really cool movie that I feel like did not get the... I don't feel like it's on as many year-end lists as it should be, because it was a fantastic movie. I just feel like a lot of people skipped it.
It's on ours. Our number five is another movie that I think is not going to be on as many year-end lists as it could, would, have, should have been, because it was kind of hard to find. You sort of had to be looking for it on VOD at the end of November. This was another one that the weekend I was going to go see The Interview in Cleveland, this movie was playing, and I was like, shit, I should see this again. And it was the directorial debut from Jennifer Kent. It was an Australian flick, which obviously, you know, it was pretty high on Dave's list, but it was high on mine as well. It was The Babadook, starring Essie Davis and Noah Wiseman. I'm just going to say what I think about it, and I'll kind of let Dave go. I feel like this is the type of movie I've been wanting Ty West to make, and this lady knocked it out of the park.
I wouldn't think Ty West. It's the kind of movie I want James Wan to watch, because this is like this is the movie that James Wan thinks he's making. This is the movie that should be opening at $40 million a year, a weekend, not Insidious or whatever the other, Chapter 9 or whatever they're called. This movie is phenomenal to a point. I mean, Essie Davis, it's a damn shame this went VOD the same time, or I think before a theatrical release, because that makes it ineligible for an actress or for an Oscar. And I realize it's a horror movie. They probably wouldn't give her the love she deserved anyway, but it would be hard to find five actress performances this year that are better than what she does. Just the complete unraveling of a person, the complete, like, she already starts at a low point, and to just go lower, she's so damn compelling in this movie. The spooks, the scares are legitimate scares. They're not just...
they're not like Paranormal Activity kind of
jump
scares.
They're not just dumb jump scares. They're legitimate, like, built-up scares. The kid, for what he's doing, is fine enough.
I thought he was really good. I mean, he starts off the movie. You hate him so much. Yeah. You want him to die in the most painful way possible. But by the end of it, you're rooting for the little bastard. And
yeah.
I do think that's a credit to, you know, he was able to play both sides of that coin.
I just feel like this movie built up to stuff that it didn't deliver on, I think. There was some, what I took as foreshadowing earlier, that didn't really, like, the gadgets are my main thing. There's so many gadgets at the beginning. It's like, oh, these are going to be a major player in the end.
Not really.
Like, but I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. Like, that's why I love Edgar Wright movies. I just praised Goldberg and Rogan for the same thing. Like, I like teasing something early and then it being a major player later. This is the kind of movie that I feel like American audiences would eat up, but it's not
in March or February, January.
Yeah.
First quarter.
They've been putting out movies in Again, exactly. January, February, March, this movie would be massive. Release this in mid-October. There were no real horror movies this October.
Well, that's true. I mean, was it Annabelle? Was that October?
I think that was the week after Halloween, actually. Yeah, I don't. But, I mean, that's the thing. Is like this movie should be going toe-to-toe with those movies and just crushing them. I don't mean to bash Juan because he's found what works and he's sticking with what works. But I just feel like this is playing on everything that he's making work and doing it to a much
if
more
like
skilled level.
If you like his stuff, you would really like this because it's a really, really well done version of what he shows. And I mean, I like James Wan more often than not. I just liked this a lot. And I like Ty West, and I feel like the kind of slow burn, tension building stuff that he tries to do, I think was delivered really, really well in this flick. It does kind of have a bit of an open-ended ending that
you can take it a few different ways.
Yeah, you can, and some of those ways you can definitely see where it doesn't pay off.
It left me wanting more, but it left me like I love movies like this from first-time directors because it'd have to be extreme circumstances that I don't immediately see Jennifer Kent's next movie.
Right.
Like the first opportunity I get because I mean, it, as much as Essie Davis, it's worth watching for her performance. I think it's directed pretty damn beautifully, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And she definitely knew where she was going with it. She delivered. So I may have my qualms about it. I may have my, you know, it left me wanting a little bit more, but it left me with trust in that director that she's going to give me what I want. I just may have to wait for another movie or two, but I'll still see him.
I don't know that we'd necessarily have a Babadook sequel, although I mean if they wanted to do a sequel to that, I'm sure I would watch it. I'd probably watch a Babadook 3 or 4 at this point. Our number 4 is a sequel, and if you listen to our uppies, it is the sequel from our cutest couple, Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill in Phil Lord and Chris Miller's 22 Jump Street. We'll probably have more from Misters Lord and Miller a bit later on. But this is a movie that I'm pretty sure if you've ever heard Dave talk at all, it's not going to be a surprise that it's on this list and it's on as high as it is. I think the reason that it's not even higher than that is because I didn't like it quite as much, but I still thought it was really, really funny. And it does deliver on that action movie sequel, but sort of a parody of that, like Wayne did with They Came Together.
Yeah, it's a very tongue-in-cheek action sequel, and it's not hiding the fact that it's the same movie again. A lot of really good jokes, and I think my favorite thing to come out of all the Sony leaks was the idea to do the next Jump Street movie as a Men in Black crossover, which basically just takes Schmidt and Janko, and instead of them going undercover to a different school, they just become Men in Black. I am all for that idea, because I don't need a 24 Jump Street, but if you give me a Men in Black 1 starring those two, absolutely. I love 21 Jump Street and I love 22 Jump Street because of the chemistry between those two guys. They are so good together and the characters are good together. It's not just that the actors are perfect for each other. The characters are perfect for each other and I love that they play on that dynamic. And Ice Cube has a scene to shine in this. I think the Channing Tatum, the scene he gets the moment to just shine, he just knocks it out of the park, and I think it's the highlight from both movies. If I had to pick a favorite scene from either of the Jump Street movies, the Channing Tatum revelation scene in this one takes the cake by far, because I don't know that I've ever laughed harder in a movie theater in a 2-minute burst. Very, very funny. Not as well put together as the first one, but I think that was kind of by design. Because I think what made the first one so good is it was very, very funny, but it was also a pretty good story. Like, they had good character arcs, and they had, you know, the supporting characters were really good. This kind of didn't have the cohesiveness of the story. And it's
easy to look at, like, oh, this is an action movie sequel. Of course, it's not supposed to be like that, which maybe we're just giving them a little bit too much credit, but it works.
Yeah, it worked great. They didn't have the supporting cast that what's her name? The girl from Workaholics, Jamie Bell or whatever her name is. She was fine. She had Jillian Bell. She had some good one-liners in. I liked Amber Stevens for what she was supposed to do. I liked Ice Cube's expanded role. I love this movie. And there were so many stupid in like movie nerd jokes. The red herring tattoo is one of my favorite gags I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah.
The Benjamin School Hill School of Film I thought was great. Like there's so many little the meet cute, like the stuff like that. Like it's just stuff that if you're a movie nerd or a screenwriting nerd, like there were so many jokes in there that I just
maybe like and
I felt like it was they were written for me. I felt like so many of the jokes were written for like people who watch movies just like I do.
Not to keep looping it back to They Came Together, but if you're going to write an action movie sequel, you should probably watch this too, because again, it's kind of all the tropes in an action movie sequel. They parody off those, but in a very like it's self-aware, or is it? You know what I mean?
One of my favorite things is when Nick Offerman, who sets up everything brilliantly, he had one scene in the first one, killed it. One scene in this one, killed it. But when Nick Offerman, when they're talking to him, on the back wall is a picture framed of Nick Offerman from the first movie. So he's just sitting at his desk talking to these two. Behind him, a picture of him sitting at his desk talking to those. And it's just so little stuff like that that I just adored. And I love these two guys together. I love these directors. I would see anything they do. Big year for them. But I love this movie.
I love this movie as well. We love our number three, which is directed by Mr. Lord and Miller. It's The Lego Movie, a little back-to-back Jacks from those guys, starring Will Arnett, Elizabeth Banks, Alison Brie, blah, 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 blah. But
Chris Pratt,
Channing Tatum, and Jonah Hill as well. One of the things I think that I like the most about what Lord and Miller are doing is their joke-writing ability. Yeah, if you're doing an R-rated comedy full of a bunch of dick and fart jokes, or you're doing a family movie, like the jokes in each of them are funny. They're well crafted. The callbacks are there. It's just great comedic writing. And I mean, I don't know that you could really work in two separate areas the way they did this year and do them as well.
Like, this movie's so perfect. I feel like we've talked about it so much. I've seen it a million times. The kids took them to the theater to see it. Once it came out on DVD, we've watched it. It's on in my house at least three or four times a week, because between having it DVR'd and the Blu-ray, we watch this movie a lot. Like, my biggest regret of this year is, like, I like Paul Feig enough, and I'm excited for an all-females Ghostbusters movie, but once news came out that the studio wanted Phil Lord and Chris Miller to do Ghostbusters and they passed, I will never forget that. Like, just the thought of a film. What could have been. I mean, that they are the perfect duo to do anything. And Ghostbusters is so near and dear to my heart that, of course, I want them doing a Ghostbusters movie. But the movie's so good. The soundtrack, the Batman song is great. Golden Globe screwed up and the Oscars better fix it. Everything is awesome. Should be nominated for Best Song, because you won't find a better song in a movie this past year. There's so many good things you could say about this movie. It was different than I expected it to be, because, you know, you look at how do you make a battleship movie? Oh, it turns out you shouldn't. How do you make a, I don't know. There's been so many movies made that's like, how do you make a movie of that? And 9 times out of 10, you realize like, oh, you don't. Well, that 10th time out of 10 is how do you make a movie about Legos? They answered it because it's brilliant.
I mean, I think a lot of the Lego stuff that they'd been doing, like with the games and with some of the shorter form stuff, has been really good and really funny.
Lego Marvel, Batman,
yeah.
Star Wars, those things are great, but this is a whole other level.
This is tremendous, and again, it's not just the directors, but everybody involved.
The fact we're getting a Lego Batman movie, I cannot wait.
Yeah, I'd absolutely watch Lego Justice League, especially if Superman and Green Lantern are played by those two guys, because that, I mean, their cameo I thought was tremendous. I think that Will Arnett might be my favorite Batman ever, supplanting Mike Keaton just because he was so good in it. I really, really like that movie. It's kind of weird that it is only our third favorite of the year. As much as, you know, we liked Senors Lord and Miller, maybe the only person that had a better year than those two would be Chris Pratt, who, in addition to starring in the Lego movie, headlined a little film that made a couple dollars from a studio that does some funny book movies, Guardians of the Galaxy, directed by James Gunn, starring Chris Pratt, Vin Diesel, Bradley Cooper, Zoe Saldana, and Dave Bautista. This is one that I think we both were interested in seeing. We thought if Marvel can make a Guardians of the Galaxy movie and it's good and people embrace it, then they can pretty much do anything they want. And I gotta believe that this far exceeded our expectations, or maybe anybody else's.
I had very high hopes for this movie, and it exceeded them all. It's probably my favorite Marvel movie so far. And as much as I love Cap 2, I love the Avengers, I think this one tops them both. Just the humor in it, the jokes, the action, the characters. And it's a damn fine, impressive directing job for James Gunn. Whereas in the Avengers, Joss Whedon had 6 movies built up of character introduction.
And characters that people know. People know Thor because they had seen him in a couple movies. People know Captain America. Nobody knows Star-Lord.
James Gunn had to...
Even in the movie, people don't know Star-Lord.
James Gunn had to build the universe, build a villain, get this team together, and make you care about the team. And he did it wonderfully. And the acting didn't hurt. I mean, everybody... Who thought Dave Bautista was going to be, you know, comic relief in a Marvel movie and deliver? Zoe Saldana, I mean, everybody was great. Bradley Cooper taking a voice-only role. I mean, this is Academy Award-nominated actor as a raccoon. And I thought he was great. I really like Rocket. I thought what they did with Rocket and Groot, I think the effects looked good. And if this doesn't show up in some of the effects, like Oscar categories or makeup, it's weird to talk comic book movies for Oscars, but makeup and special effects, this should absolutely be in the discussion for Oscars because some of the best of both I saw all year. It's everything you want from a superhero sci-fi space epic team-up movie, and it delivered on every front, and I absolutely adored it.
And I think we both really liked the fact that James Gunn was the guy that was going to be helming this because, I mean, some of his earlier stuff, Super and Slither, we both like an awful lot, but I was always interested as like, okay, now how is James Gunn going to direct a movie that isn't a hard R? And I think he did a great job. He definitely captured the humor.
He fit a cum joke into a Disney movie.
Yeah.
That should be at the top of his resume.
That'll be on his headstone.
Yes.
Yeah, he fit one in there, and it's not like you don't have to go to the internet and see like, these are dicks that people drew into. Yeah, like that one was just right up there. And it worked. Just a really, really good movie. And now at this point, literally anything Marvel does. You want to do a Doctor Strange movie? Yep, sure. That's fine. The Ant-Man trailer that's going to drop. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know that Marvel has made a misstep in any
Hulk
movies
excluding.
They choose to make. Well, I mean, yeah, recently, really. The movies they choose to make, the casting, the directing choices, they have done everything right, and it keeps showing in the box office when they're consistently...
Even the stuff coming up. Pick a better Doctor Strange than Benedict Cumberbatch. I said if you make a Black Panther movie, there's only 2 actors that should even be considered. They picked one of them. So, I mean, everything they're doing is just... They're on fire. Now, for Captain Marvel, for Carol Danvers, needs to be Emily Blunt or Jodie Whittaker. Those...
Yeah, I think...
They listened to me on Black Panther. Listen to me on that.
If they listened to our podcast, we just said how good Emily Blunt was in The Bitch of War. She can carry that.
She's absolutely perfect. Yeah. But if you want a little lesser known, Jodie Whittaker kills it in everything she does. Phenomenal actress.
And that leaves our number one movie of the year, which I mentioned there may be some controversy surrounding Lone Survivor at the 10 spot because Dave saw it last year and he counted it as a, well, I guess at this point it'd be a 2013 movie. And I stand firm and it's a 2014 movie. Our number one is the same thing. Dave has this tendency to jet set across the pond to England to see some English movies when first available. And he saw this a couple months before I did and before the rest of America. I think we got it. Sometime
March or April.
I think it's April, yeah. But once I did see John S. Baird's Filth, I was in love. Starring James McAvoy, Jamie Bell, and Eddie Marzan.
And Imogen Poots.
And Imogen Poots as well. This was one that I know Dave wasn't going to have on his list because it was his number one last year. And it really didn't take a great amount of arm wringing for me to get him to go back-to-back this year. I was willing to leave it off, but I'm okay. If we talked to you last year and Dave told you how great Filth was, if I talked to you at the beginning of this year and said, hey, there's this movie called Filth, it's really, really good, and you still haven't seen it, maybe, just maybe, the third time is the charm. And if you ever have a question on why we've named an award after James McAvoy, there are a couple movies that you can watch and get it. But I don't know that there's one that's more appropriate than Filth. From the trailer to what he actually delivered in the flick, the character's so out there, but so enthralling. You just have to, you just like a train wreck. You can't look away.
What I liked about it is it's not just, hey, here's an hour and a half of James McAvoy being a dickhead cop. There's a lot more to it.
It's a character study.
Yeah. I have no problem putting it number one collectively this year because, you know what, if I played by the rules and had it as a this year release, it's going above any of the movies I have. So I'll absolutely have it my favorite movie 2 years in a row. I do not care because I love the movie that much. And I wanted to bring it up. I didn't want to cut it off because it's on Netflix now. So if you have Netflix, go watch Filth.
It's 97 minutes. I don't even know
what to tell you to buckle up for. It's fun. But not
watch. I think watch the trailer. If you're not hooked after the trailer, then you're probably not going to like this movie. But if you do like what you see, there's so much more. And I don't just mean so much more bad behavior. There's a lot more behind the movie that if you can stomach what you see in the trailer, by the time you get to the end, it's
a good movie.
It really is.
It's a great movie.
It's our collective number one movie of the year. The best of the bunch of
2 years running.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how we can kind of, well, best movie that came out. And I don't even know how we would weasel this into our best movie of 2015, but maybe it's already the front runner, I guess. I guess just to kind of recap things, we'll go from 15 to 1. I, Origins kicked us off, followed by The Fault in Our Stars, Foxcatcher, Captain America 2, They Came Together, Lone Survivor was our number 10, The Guest, The Interview, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes at number 7, Edge of Tomorrow, The Babadook at number 5, 22 Jump Street at 4, The Lego Movie at 3, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and Filth, your number one movie of 2014. I know there's a couple that, you know, when we did our collective list, a couple of Dave's got bumped out, a couple of mine got bumped out, but just kind of some parting shots for The Fallen that didn't make the list.
Yeah, I'm just going to go through real quick. The only one of my top 10 that didn't make our collective top 15, Coherence. I've talked about Primer a lot, where you may not understand what's going on, but it's so well acted and directed that it's just fun to go along for the ride. Coherence is that. It's a total mind mess. It's an awesome movie, though. Coherence is highly recommended. The Signal is a really cool movie. Got a lot of buzz this year. It's a pretty cool movie. Calvary was on my halftime show list. Brendan Gleeson, one of the McDonough brothers, fantastic movie. The Captive, Adam Egoyan's newest one, starring Ryan Reynolds, Rosario Dawson, and Mariel Enos. This one was very, very close to being in my top 10, because as far as impactful movies, like, it stuck with me. Adam Egoyan has that tendency to do, but this was a little different. It's a fantastic lost child movie, which those could be hit or miss, but I like it better than Prisoners, which was the big one last year. Big Hero 6 I loved. The Drop, Tom Hardy with a puppy the whole movie, and James Gandolfini, yes. The one I love is Mark Duplass being his most Mark Duplassy times 2. That one is on Netflix. If you've not watched The One I Love, it is on Netflix. I highly recommend it right now. Fantastic movie. And then The Dead 2. The Dead 2, sequel to The Dead from a few years ago. This is what Halloween was supposed to be. The Dead took place one place with these characters. The Dead 2, same style, different characters, different setting. I'll watch as many of these movies as they want to make, because as much as I loved The Dead 2 was even better, I think, by a lot.
Two times, would you say?
Probably more than that. I mean, it's the best zombie movie in a while. If you haven't seen either of the Dead movies, definitely check them out. If you only have time to watch one, start with The Dead 2. Because it doesn't matter. They're not related at all. They're just same style, same zombie outbreak, just different type, different places in the world. Those are mine that did not get mentioned.
Just a couple that I wanted to mention. Chef, I really like that a lot. Favreau, I don't want to say at his Favreauiest, but kind of back to doing what he does, writing, directing, starring in. And I thought it was really, really good. Leguizamo was a tremendous sidekick in that flick. And I guess you really got to take your hat off to Favreau for writing his love interest in the movie as Scarlett Johansson and Sofia Vergara. That takes some balls. I'm glad he did it. And it turned out to be a really, really good movie, too. I also liked the Grand Budapest Hotel. That was one that I maybe kind of forgot that was this year, which is really weird because I liked it a lot when I saw it. It might be the most accessible of Wes Anderson's movies. It feels like the story is, I don't want to say it's straightforward because it's probably straightforward for Wes Anderson, but it makes kind of sense. You don't really, it's not out there, I guess. You could kind of see a scenario in which that could happen. So I did like Grand Budapest Hotel a lot. And one that I was really kind of excited about based solely on the cast was Sean Levy's This Is Where I Leave You. Love me some Jason Bateman. Love Tina Fey. Sure, what the hell. Adam Driver, now he's in Star Wars. So I'll see anything he's in. I thought the movie was really pretty funny. Jane Fonda was really, really good in it with her big fake breasts. The only thing that kind of I thought was a little bit... held this movie back for me is I felt like at some points it was a little bit more of a bummer than it needed to be. Everyone in the movie's really, really kind of in bad shape emotionally, and I get that. That's fine. But sometimes it seems like they went out of their way to be like, we're really sad. It was funny. It's full of a lot of people that I like. So I guess as an ensemble, I thought it was really cool to see. And a movie that I had some pretty high expectations for it and didn't really disappoint me. So, that's it. This Is Where I Leave You. That's where I leave 2014.
And we talked at the end of 2013 kind of wondering, you know, was 2015 going to be such a big year for movies? Was 2014 just kind of like the appetizer before the main course? It was an okay year for movies. I mean, there were some good movies, but I still kind of feel like that. Just looking ahead, like, if we do a collective top 15 next year, which we plan on it, I'm going to list 17 movies. I would think the over-under of 10, I would guess at least 10 of these will be on our collective top 15 next year. Just in established ones.
In no particular order.
Star Wars Force Awakens.
Probably.
Jurassic World. Avengers Age of Ultron.
I believe it.
Ant-Man. Yeah. Mad Max Fury Road. Pitch Perfect 2.
Yep.
Terminator Genesis, which I think looks pretty damn good.
Mother of Dragons.
Yeah. Magic Mike XXL. Minions. Hunger Games Catching Fire Part 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
And then Spectre, which I know you'll like a lot. And then those are just established ones. Like, ones I'm excited, not franchise. Chappie, Child 44, Trainwreck, the new Judd Apatow one with LeBron James, and Crimson Peak. And then you have two Pixar movies in The Good Dinosaur and Inside Out. Like, no Pixar movies this year, two next year. So, I mean, I think 15 is going to break quite a few records for total box office because, especially those first batch, I don't think any of those are going to bomb.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
I think 15 is going to break quite a few records.
Yes.
And I plan on being here the whole way.
So, let us know, like, if we missed your favorite year. Your favorite movie of the year. One of the reasons that we like doing this is, you know, if there is a movie that Dave's got on his list that I haven't seen yet, I write it down and then I go watch it. But since Dave is going to be much more active on the Twitter this year, if we missed your favorite movie from 2014 or even one of your favorite movies from 2014, let us know because, damn it, we'll watch it. And, you know, we'll let you know what we think either on the Twitter or I think we do this podcast about once a week. So there's a good chance we might say something then, too. But we like movies. That's why we do this. So if there's one that we haven't seen, I'd love to hear about it.
And for 2015, like I said, I want to be more active on the Facebook and the Twitter. So we'll plug them at moviesonup, facebook.com/moviesonup. Like us, interact with us. I would love to get some interaction. And then me personally, find me on Twitter at Dave Pacella. I have a lot of stuff coming up in 2015. And since we bank them, I don't always get to plug them. But check out daddyissues.net. That we put up one episode around Thanksgiving, and then we're going to take off this year doing it's a new podcast with my buddy Mike Kalinish. We're talking about being being dads, that'll be probably one or two a month over this year. But just check daddyissues.net. There'll be another season of Juggle Ohio at some point. That's juggleohio.com. So in case I forget to plug, just follow me at Dave Pacella on the Twitter, or get to me through Movies on Up. But that's it. Thanks, everybody, for 2014, and we're excited about hanging out with you. 2015 is going to be an awesome year for movies, and I cannot wait.
And I guess we're starting off 2015. We mentioned some of the Marvel stuff coming up. We're actually next week going to hit our favorite movies from people that did Marvel movies after they were in Marvel movies. So I don't know what the hell. I don't know how we're going to make that a succinct title, but I'm glad I don't have to figure it out. That'll be Dave's. That's our next week episode. So until then,
keep it up. Yeah, I knew that one would go long.